Hey, everybody, I'm Katie Antopoulos, and this is The News from BuzzFeed News. Julia Furlan is out this week, so guess what? I'm in charge. On this week's group chat, we're going to be talking about representation and my personal favorite thing, internet outrage. And then we're going to test my ability to sort real news from bullshit. So let's go. So two big things this week happened in the world of entertainment that caused a massive internet outrage. First, Disney announced that it would have its first officially acknowledged openly gay character in a new movie called The Jungle Cruise. The only problem is that the actor they cast is straight. And then actress Ruby Rose announced that she would be playing Batwoman, a character who canonically is Jewish and lesbian. Ruby Rose is gender fluid, but not Jewish, and she was harassed so much by fans over this casting that she quit Twitter earlier this week. All of this has us thinking about internet outrage and where the boundaries are and where they should be. Here's See Something, Say Something host Ahmed Ali Akbar with culture writer Allison Wilmore and entertainment reporter Sylvia O'Bell.
Hey, how are you guys?
Pretty good.
I think there have been, like, people have always found queer characters in Disney.
Yeah.
You know, there's like Ursula.
Thing for this human, this prince fellow. Not that I blame you.
LeFou in the live action Beauty and the Beast.
Scar. Absolutely.
My personal favorite, Shang, who is in love with both Ping and Mulan.
Sure.
True.
But this is the like being seen as the first one that is openly gay. Does it take away from the accomplishment of, you know, like portraying a gay character if a straight character is in the role?
Ooh. I mean, I think that has been an ongoing debate and I think is one that people feel a huge spectrum of feelings about, you know. But I think that what's important here is that it's the first Disney movie to have an openly gay character. And I think that there's a whole bunch of weight put on this idea that Disney, like this kind of huge feature in a lot of people's childhoods, is finally acknowledging this idea of queerness on screen. And so that puts extra burdens on this character who may be like maybe in the movie for like 3 seconds. We don't know anything about this character, really. You know, I think in some ways you're dealing with this huge weight of history, and that is what makes it so complicated.
Yeah, I think we're kind of like setting the rules as we go here. And I think that's what's so hard about this question and just this issue that's being posed to studios now, because I do agree that the importance is that we have these characters, that these characters are being represented on screen. I think that's first and foremost. I think it's great when you can have a person who's openly gay play a gay character. But I also do get that sometimes it may not work for scheduling or things we don't even know, or even just the whole debate about like that and then wanting the best person. It's so complicated and like new.
Yeah.
That like it's such a hard conversation to have.
So there's like two things here that I think are interesting to note. One is this movie, The Jungle Cruise, is based off of a ride.
Yeah, it is.
Like Pirates of the Caribbean. I don't think there's Jungle Cruise stands out there who are waiting for this character to come
out. Right,
right. There's not a whole bunch of mythology there that people are feeling very protective over.
I read this book and I saw this person as this the whole time.
I don't even think there's a book. Maybe there is, but it's just like a ride go on a boat and like... So that's... Part one. And part two, that means that Disney is like aware that people are looking for representation. Like whatever announcement it is the reporting was a little muddy. I talked to Christy Andoli, who did covered some of the conversation here, that it's a little muddy where this thing that it was the first openly gay character came from. So there is like some strategy that's also backfiring on the studios, which is a really interesting feedback loop.
I do not believe that Disney could not find a gay actor for this role. Like, if they wanted that, they could have found a gay actor. I don't think it was important for them. And I think that if this is going to turn out to be the first openly gay character in a Disney movie, I mean, I don't know how much thought they've given to, like, the weight of history here. I mean, I do want to point out, it's a long time coming, you know?
Like, yeah, it's definitely overdue. And I can see how it being a historical first role could be emphasized by having that character. So, like, in that sense of being historical is meaningful and, like, necessary. I think I also, like, can't help but just think about all the movies, not even that long ago, that we never even thought to have this conversation about, like, even with Moonlight, for example. Most of the characters in Moonlight are not openly gay men.
Same thing with Call Me By Your Name.
Love, Simon.
Love, Simon. Yeah. I had the name got jumbled for a second in my head.
Yeah, I think that part that I think is always really difficult to talk about is to be like, how much do we think that we like this movie? Like, people loved Call Me By Your Name. And so suddenly it became easier to forgive the fact that its two leads were not, did not identify as gay. I think that when you have something like this, where we're looking at this from way out, you know, and we're looking at this come together, this movie has not been made yet. All we can talk about is, like, if this is going to be a landmark of representation, what that means.
Yeah. And I think that kind of speaks to the transparency of the process and if that's helping or hurting it, right? Mm-hmm, like, the fact that we, like, if we would have known about Moonlight very early on and then we never got a chance to, you know, to have Trevante have that moment.
You're the only man that's ever touched me. You're the only one.
We're not Hollywood producers. We're not casting agents. You know, we're not all critics. Allison is, you know. But it's like, so sometimes it's like, how, like, what do I know to an extent?
Right.
Well, I think that also, you know, we're getting to have this conversation now because it's no longer looked at. And this was, you know, the case. It was accepted common knowledge not that long ago that being an openly gay actor meant that you were not going to get work, mainstream work, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, I think a lot of this is becoming, like, really accelerating as a conversation because there are, you are allowed to, you know, like, Hollywood accepts that you can have a career and be openly gay now. And you can be very visible about it.
And so part of the actual thing, this, I'm glad you brought up transparency. I think that's, like, a really good word to talk about this, because this Ruby Rose thing, too, is also, if you follow the narrative, CW actually put out a casting call that this is a character, Batwoman, who is a out lesbian character, and we want an out lesbian actor playing this character. And when Ruby Rose was cast, there was, like, a lot of backlash that, you know, my Batwoman is Jewish and lesbian. She's, like, there's so many lesbian actors who deserved a break, and, like, you know, Ruby Rose is gender fluid or whatever. There's, like, all these, like, things that are sort of, so it's interesting how that transparency of, like, we want to do this right sort of backfired on CW. Sylvia, do you think this is just, like, a facet of stan culture right now, that we're always going to be sort of, like, destroying things that we love? Or is there some, maybe there's some legitimacy too to this, to this?
I mean, I think that's almost human nature, destroying things that you love. That's a whole deeper conversation. But I do think that social media has even, like, enhanced this ability for stans to put pressure on people to make things not as good as they would have been. You know, like, my mom always says, like, too many cooks in the kitchen is always an issue. And I do think that, like, we are definitely in that time where so many of us are like, this is, like I said before, it's literally not our jobs. But I mean, I do think it's important to fight for representation. And so I get our need to be vocal to that extent. But I do think when it comes to even, you know, sometimes people want to give advice about plot lines and characters such a thing, go, and all these things. And then it really takes a turn, and it's like, I don't know. You know, because even with the Ruby Rose thing, like you said, now we're trying to draw a line between gender and sexuality and which version of the two is necessary in this way. Mm-hmm, and it's, like, so messy and complicated.
Yeah, and I think that the whole issue of Ruby Rose not being Jewish aside, there is also this real feeling of, like, was she not the right kind of gay?
Right,
you know,
right.
Like, you're not gay enough, or, like, straight people like you too much. All of this kind of, like, complicated baggage where I think what you're really aware of is the fact that when there are so few of these roles still out there, that people need you to bring, like, basically a whole community's worth of representation for, like, one character, which is impossible, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the answer to that is we need more of these things so that not this amount of pressure gets put on, like, one person's casting.
And like you said, it's sort of about quality as well. If people like a thing, like, they only think it's, like, high quality, then they might not care as much. And I think in this case, which is sort of funny, it's like that she's not a good actor, maybe.
No.
And have you seen the CW superhero shows?
Right. Well, it's like the CW casting. I mean, no shade, CW, but, like, acting quality is not what, where, you know, your standpoint.
You want people who are, like, look good in super, in skin tight superhero clothing. And I think universally people agree Ruby Rose is attractive. That's, like, how I even knew about her. I actually,
right.
You know, found out because people were thirsting after her, basically.
Yeah, she's super hot.
we are fighting a lot about this idea of how much leeway there is between how much someone matches up to the many qualities a character might have, and then how much we're like, oh yeah, this is art and entertainment, and we have suspension of disbelief, and it's acting, right?
Right, because it's like acting. Like when, so now, like only bad people can play bad people next, and like only like good people. Like it's like actually no, she's not from California. She's from Connecticut. It's like I don't know where the line starts.
So I think part of what's interesting about this is also how personal it gets. When I look at this Batwoman thing, I'm like, well, this character actually didn't exist 10 years ago. I remember when she was introduced. She was like not even a character for 50 years or something like that. And I think it was really cool that she was a queer character. I didn't even realize she was Jewish, honestly. But there was probably a community of people for whom they really felt seen. And then I started thinking about Ms. Marvel, who is a Pakistani American immigrant who lives in New Jersey and is a superhero. And when they announced that, like, maybe Ms. Marvel would get a movie, some Pakistani American men started, like some of the celebrities like Kumail Nanjiani, Riz Ahmed, and Mindy Kaling, who are not Pakistani women, were like tweeting, we want to be involved in this, we want to write it. And people were pissed because they were like, how can you not do a Pakistani American woman? And I was like, for once, I was like, yeah, I think like Indians and Pakistani men are all over the place. Like, where is the role for this? And I realized like how messy it can get because an Indian person could do the role well. Like a non-Muslim person could probably do the role well, although they'll mess up the Arabic. So like, what's that for you guys? Is there like a role in which you think about like where I need my specific experience where that would like sort of rile up your inner Stan?
Yeah, no, I think it's very interesting because like when you even mentioned that, some of the earliest examples I could think of is like Jennifer Lopez playing Selena, and that being interesting because she was Puerto Rican and not Mexican, and you know, and then in the black community, especially with Storm, who was one of our first black women superheroes, and it was Halle Berry, who was lighter skinned, but in the comic book, Storm is supposed to be darker. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they've still never changed that to this day. And I think most recently, for me with Black Panther, as somebody who's Kenyan-American and seeing, like, these African characters on screen, which is why I was really happy to see Lupita, who is also Kenyan, playing this character. But I understand that, like, Chadwick is not African, you know, Denai and Daniel Kaluuya and Lupita are all from African descent, but it's like the rest of the cast, Angela Bassett, Forest Whitaker, and there was this whole conversation about their accents, and even Winston Duke, who did an amazing job, is not. So it was definitely one of those moments where I had to kind of be like, okay, yes, it would have been ideal if all of these people were African nationalities from different countries, but I also get that we needed the star power for this movie to do well and for representation to even happen.
Right.
So for me, it was like an easy balance in that case. But I definitely know it was something that was heavily debated at the time.
Yeah, for me, so someone growing up who's half English and half Singaporean Chinese, I never really expected to get much by way of like seeing my particular experience on screen. And then we happen to have Crazy Rich Asians coming out this week.
What about us taking an adventure east?
Like Queens?
Singapore. Colin's wedding. Don't you want to meet my family?
Which is actually specifically about Singapore and Amazing. The Singapore Chinese community. Amazing. And also about like being Chinese American and this kind of the difference between an American Asian experience and one that is in Asia itself. And it was accompanied by this really interesting kind of debate early on when Henry Golding, who is the romantic lead and is like a new actor, he's a television host, he was cast as the lead, this character who's Chinese Singaporean. And there was a lot of pushback because he's half white and he's half Malay. You know, and I think that there is a lot of interesting discussion there with regard to who gets to be Asian on screen and who gets to maybe be Chinese on screen, you know, which is a whole other thing. The director, John Chu, was like very vocal about being like, I'm going to cast a wide net. I'm going to look at actors of all different Asian descents.
Right.
I mean, as someone who is mixed, like, I definitely feel like, yes, you're allowed to be Asian. At the same time, I don't think you can dismiss the idea that mixed actors have been kind of maybe given more visibility, especially I think men have been given a bit more visibility because maybe they fit into this Hollywood idea.
Specifically for Asians or just you think overall?
I mean, I think that you can have this discussion like in the specifics of like different racial experiences, but like you don't want to be dismissive of the idea that like maybe being mixed is perceived as, like, giving you an advantage in some ways.
Right. Yeah, because I also think there's, like, the whole thing about with the lack of stories that are being told for these minorities, it's, like, we're limiting then the actors who can play it if we're doing it in that way, where it's like so few black movies are being made, especially at the level with Marvel. When it's a group of minorities who are all struggling to get roles in the first place, it's hard to then be upset about it. Like, again, with the Black Panther example, with these women were dark-skinned, and we know how hard it is for dark-skinned black women to get these roles. So it was a moment where it's like, they're not African, but they are dark-skinned, and we even know, like, that's hard for them. So there's always, like, this weird, like, who's to say, like, you can't do it, but you can do it when there's not enough stories for all of us.
Right. And I love the point you made about casting and the actors. You got to think about, like, how much of a hustle you got to get to get a role, which is a starring role. Like, how many starring male roles are there, like Crazy Rich Asians, you know? And there's a lot of pressure on these stories, you know, that they have to be perfect in every way. And a lot of the actors are just trying to make it, you know.
Trying to get jobs.
Yeah.
Right. And get asked to kind of like handle this conversation a lot. Right. Which is why I think that it's the other part of the representation conversation that is to be like, we don't want just people in these roles, but we know that they're going to be out there doing press for these roles and they're going to be out there, you know, facing these questions. And I think that is part of it, too, to be like, we want someone who can speak to being Muslim. You know, we want someone who can speak to, maybe the Asian American experience versus like an Asian experience. With all of these things that like we expect more from actors now with regard to
this. Yeah, that's very true.
And it is hard because, like, to your point, like, Crazy Rich Asians, this is the first film with an all-Asian cast since when? You know, like,
Since Joy Luck Club.
Yeah.
25 years.
25 years. So, like, if all Asian actors have to wait 25 years for their specific country to be the lead of that story, then, like, how is anybody supposed to have a career?
Yeah. I mean, I feel that deeply as a Pakistani because, like, all the stories are Indian. So I'm like, I look at all the Indian stories and I love them, but I'm just like, you know, like, where are the Pakistani roles? But then, like, you get Riz and, like, these, and, like, Kumail and all these guys and, like, these, you know, small roles. And I'm like, you know, you just take it when you can. And everyone is just sort of playing that game also of building a career. So, you know, I think part of what I, like, want to talk about here. It's hard to talk about this in generalities, but in each specific instance, I always think, is the outrage productive? Where is this outrage coming from? And like, how can we channel it into something useful?
I don't know. I mean, I think that in some ways this is a way for like people who feel like they've been unheard for so long, both with regard to representation and sometimes just with regard to fandom, you know, in general, that you feel like you have this big platform now.
Absolutely.
That, you know, you have to, like, creators hear you. Mm-hmm. You can affect what happens. And I think that that is like a kind of heady thing for people to experience. And there are positive and negatives to that.
Yeah, I agree. Because, I mean, yes, voice your opinion, but, you know, no, don't bully Ruby Rose off Twitter, period.
Yeah,
you know
right,
what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, it's like there's like, I feel like we don't know Wendy to draw the line. And it's like also, Ruby Rose is just, again, we talked about people not maybe knowing the difference between who has a say and her getting that part. You know, that wasn't her decision to make. We shouldn't be attacking her. If you really want to make a change, you have to talk to the casting directors and the producers and at those people. But, like, the public doesn't just know that. So a lot of times the actors, like you said, are at the forefront of it, even though tech, like, that's not really their job.
Yeah.
Right.
And also I think a lot of times this stuff also is really loose with how power operates when it comes to race. Like, it's a much different thing for, like, for instance, we were talking about The Hate U Give. There's like a lighter-skinned character compared to the darker-skinned character that is described in the book. But like, you think about this Crazy Rich Asians thing. How often is like an indigenous Malaysian person going to have a role? Like, it's actually worse in a way to be in that position. Like, he has less possibility of ever having that role represented because Chinese are like so much more overrepresented in media. It's not a lot, obviously, but it's still more.
No, but it's true.
Yeah.
So like, obviously, like, a Jewish lesbian character hasn't been shown that much, but there's like a lot of representation of Jewish folks in media. So it's like complicated and it matters, obviously. Like, it would be awesome if that was the case. But I think like it's like applied universally, like everyone has to be the same. But the power just is different depending on who the character is.
Yeah. And Amanda is a good example of somebody who has faced this on both sides, right? Because in The Hate U Give, she's being told, you know, that she was cast in a position that she was too light for. But in Hunger Games, they were coming at her because people suddenly were surprised that Rue was black. And it was like, and so she had to have faced, like, it's kind of like I can see on her end being like, one minute I'm, you know, too dark. The next minute I'm not dark enough.
Absolutely.
And I feel for her as just a person.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like, where are we, you know, drawing drawing the lines there.
Yeah, and I think we get into this weird feeling where you think the internet is waiting for someone to like gracefully step aside, you know, to be like that's what they want from Ruby Rose is for her to be like, you're right. I'm going to give someone else a chance. And you're hasn't had that many chances yet herself.
Right. You know? Yes, these millions of dollars, you can have them back.
Yeah, exactly. This
house I was going to buy
this
my mother.
This huge opportunity.
Take it.
These many lesbian superheroes there are for me to play. Yes. Like, there's not that many.
I will wait for the specific one who is gender fluid.
Right.
Gender queer,
and maybe not necessarily
bisexual. You know, to your extent, like, there's moments when it is necessary, but to your earlier point about stan culture taking it too far, I do think when we get into the nuances of it in this very gray area that sometimes people just gotta, like, just let it go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think especially when people are like, here's the person you should cast. And you're like, okay,
Actually, you're not
the casting director.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, Sylvia, I also want to ask you, because you have a show now about Insecure that's an after show.
Hella opinions.
Yeah. Like, how do you feel like Insecure has like also been a lot shaped by Black Twitter? Do you feel like it's been like positive on the show or like complicated it? How has that show dealt with that?
You know, I think what many people love Insecure for and why we specifically felt like it'd be a great show to create hella opinions around is just because Issa Rae has her thumb on the culture in such like an authentic way where she really gets it. And it was the first time specifically like Black millennials who are on social media and who like love Drake and Frank Ocean and like love like pre-games and just all these things that we never really saw of ourselves on TV. But the problem with that is then we get so attached to it because it feels so much like us, more than even the other Black shows that we see on TV, that then we're like, but where are the condoms? And it's like, well, you don't ask for the condoms on Power or Sex in the City, and not to say that we shouldn't, but like it's because we're so attached to it that you feel like you're watching yourself and you want to be safe to yourself suddenly. Or like, you know, then now with this season in particular, it's like the removal of Lawrence's character played by J.R. Ellis, and it's like people have like created petitions, Facebook ads.
Lawrence Hive is serious.
Like the Lawrence Hive is not joking. 11,000 signatures.
Oh my God.
Last time I checked on that petition, and there was even a young man protesting outside of the New York surprise premiere. No, Lawrence, no peace. And it was like he was locked up or something.
Gosh.
So it was like it's like Lawrence is not in jail. He was just an ex-boyfriend whose number is now deleted. And it's like there will be more Black men to represent you. And I think it's somebody who even saw. Because we are in this industry, and I've seen half of the first season already, and I'm not going to give any spoilers, don't panic. But, like, you know, the first episode has come out, and Daniel is really taking the baton in that scenario, so it's kind of like we're so used to only having one that when we think that person disappears, we think they're not going to be replaced. And I think that was really what straight Black men and all their issues were going through with Lawrence is because they're like, but who's going to represent my brand of fuckboy now? And it's like, don't worry, men are trash. There's plenty of people who are going to pick up this baton for you on the show.
Yeah, you have a segment about how men are trash on your show.
We have a men are trash segment Mondays at 9 p.m. Watch.
Look at that transition.
Beautiful.
I was just going to ask you where people can watch.
Yes, at the BuzzFeed News handle, BuzzFeed News on Twitter we stream, and then BuzzFeed Entertainment on Facebook, and on BuzzFeed News' YouTube page also. We're everywhere.
Great. All right. So I'm sure we're going to be having these conversations about casting for, like, the rest of our lives, but I'm really interested to see how this Ruby Rose thing plays out.
Poor Ruby girl. Stay strong, sis.
That was Ahmed Ali Akbar, Allison Wilmore, and Sylvia Obel. Since this is a group chat, we want to know what you think. This week, we want to know, how do you decide what counts as accurate representation? If you want to get in on the group chat, text JoJo the words group chat to 929-236-9577. Your response could be on next week's episode. So, you know, make a good one. Sylvia just launched a new Insecure recap show called Hella Opinions. Text JoJo the word insecure to watch the first episode. Again, JoJo's number is 929-236-9577. And now it's time for Fake News You Can Use with Jane Litvinenko. What do you have for me today?
All right, three questions as usual. Let's start it off. In France, street harassment is now illegal and carries a fine of 750 euros. Is that real or fake?
Ooh, I love the idea of it, right? Like, I don't like street harassment. I would like it to be a crime. No, well, I guess street harassers like it. They like doing it for free. Protected by, you know, the laws of the land. France has laws that are not exactly like in line with American free speech concepts, like the headscarf ban, and it's a crime there to deny the Holocaust, right? So could street harassment be illegal? Let me think. I'm going to say yes, it's real.
Okay. You're correct. Congratulations.
Hey! Wee, wee, wee.
It is illegal and carries a fine on the spot of 750 euros. So essentially, if you harass a woman on the street, a police officer will give you a ticket right there.
Wow. You know, they should make it so that the 750 euros goes immediately to
the woman. To the woman. I know.
Yeah, right?
Are you ready for the next challenge?
Give me the next one.
All right. A 69-year-old grandma shot a masturbating cyclist who wanted to enter her home.
There's a lot of good things going on here. 69-year-old. Nice. Grandma.
Nice.
Masturbating cyclist. Now, what I like about this is the idea of someone masturbating while they're on a bicycle.
A man masturbating on a bicycle, even.
Cranking your hog while you're riding a bike is like, A, not road safe. Okay. Hope he was wearing a helmet. B, I'm just, for my mental image, it was a unicycle, to be honest.
Masturbating unicyclist?
I only heard cyclist. I didn't hear bicyclist. So this has got to be fake.
So it's real. So this grandma, Grandma Jean, she opened fire on a man who, as she was taking out the garbage, sort of like stopped biking. It was a bicycle. I'm sorry, Katie. And sort of like unzipped his pants and started just going at it. And then she went back into her home and he reached for the door and she realized she had two kids there. She had no time for this guy. So she shot him. It's unclear whether she will be facing charges, but the man was arrested for exposing himself.
Wow. So he lived to crank his hog another day. Hopefully he has learned his lesson.
But like, hats off to Grandma Jean.
Yeah. Don't mess with Grandma Jean in Texas.
Don't mess with Grandma Jean in Texas. All right. So you got one correct. You got one incorrect. Are you ready for the final round?
All right, final round. I'm ready. All right. I'm gonna win this one.
So this one is going to be an audio question. So first, we're going to play you the audio.
You'll never, never defeat the human spirit. Never, never, ever. And this is where we get tested. So rejoice to God Almighty.
Now, if I know one thing, that is the voice of Mr. Alex Jones.
It is Mr. Alex Jones, noted conspiracy theorist and man who said he forgot details about his children after eating a bowl of chili. Now, that was footage of him reacting to Facebook and YouTube terminating his channels. Is that real or fake?
I mean, there's a lot of layers to that question. I know that, yes, his YouTube presence was removed, so it would make sense that he would be reacting unhappily, considering it a test of, you know, free speech and God.
The human spirit, you forgot.
The human spirit.
Yeah.
Was it real in the sense of that was his real emotions? Well, that's complicated. I don't know what's going on in the heart of Alex Jones. But I believe that, yes, that was his reaction to the news that his YouTube channel was taken down.
Katie, I'm so sorry. You're wrong. So this is fake. This is a video of him from 2016, although really, who can tell? And in this specific case, he was actually angry about something to do with Hillary. It's unclear what. But somebody sent a tweet saying that it was recent. And that got almost 12,000 likes, 3,000 retweets. But it's not. It's an outdated video.
The outdated video. That's like a very, you know, tricky form of fake news, because I feel like I see that kind of stuff a lot where it's like right thing but wrong exact thing, like the timing's off.
Yeah, exactly.
If you see something like that on Twitter where it's a video clip, is there a way to tell if it's old?
There's a few ways. One is you can take a screenshot of the thumbnail of the video and drop that into Google image search, and then you'll see all the other context for it. The other thing you can do is download this really great plugin for Chrome or another browser called Invid. And essentially, you just drop in the URL of the video and it cycles through possible thumbnails for you. It does the reverse image search for you. And that's the way the debunking team here at BuzzFeed.com, the website, that's the way we verify video.
I sort of assumed that you guys just had a photographic memory of every single Alex Jones video that you clearly have watched over the last 2 years.
Katie, I've watched a lot of Alex Jones.
Just sort of stored in a Rolodex in your mind that you just fully download there.
Yeah. So you got 1 out of 3, right? How do you feel?
You know, I was really hoping to ace this. I feel like a little bit like I failed, but I think that through my failure, I hope we all can learn.
A lesson for us all. Thank you for having me.
If you want a link to that cool video verification plugin, text JoJo the word INVID, INVID. Their number is 929-236-9577. We wanted to check in with you all after last week's group chat. You might remember what we asked you was what you thought tech companies' responsibility was to police what's on their platforms. We got some really awesome responses. So one person said, I work in the ad industry, and I'm responsible for putting budgets towards platforms like Spotify or Twitter. From a business side of things, it's essential that platforms take down pages like InfoWars. There is, even in the ad industry, something like a conscience. Whew. And here's a text we got from another person. I think digital platforms have the same responsibility that an in-person location would have for safety for their visitors. Letting people run around in an online echo chamber is generating all kinds of crazy things and leading to real-life danger. Thank you guys all so much for sharing your thoughts with the group chat. Remember, this week we're wondering, how do you decide what counts as accurate representation? If you have a perspective or an opinion you'd like to share, text JoJo the words group chat to 929-236-9577. And that's our show for the week. Thank you so much for listening. If you like what you heard, please, please, please rate and review us in Apple Podcasts. It'll help more people find us and help them enjoy the show just like you're enjoying the show. And don't forget, if you text JoJo the word HOOMPST, that's WHOMST, you can get a list of everyone in this week's episode and their Twitter handles. This show is produced by the Pod Squad. That's Megan Dietrich, Alex Laughlin, Camila Salazar, Ahmed Ali Akbar, and not Julia Furlan. She's on vacation. She had nothing to do with this. She's sipping a pina colada on the beach. But I'm Katie Natopoulos. I'm here. Our boss is Cindy Venegas Jaswale, and our music is by Chad Crouch. And once again, I'm Katie Natopoulos. You can follow us on Twitter at BuzzFeed Audio, and you can also email us at podsquad@buzzfeed.com. And special thank you to JoJo, who, fun fact, turned down the role for Wall-E because the character was made of platinum and JoJo is made of steel. JoJo is sensitive about those things. So tune in Saturday for another episode of The News from BuzzFeed News.